You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 123. Today is Thursday, November 30th. We are fresh off of Thanksgiving, Steve, which means we're about 4 months away from opening day. A lot of off-season in between now and then. We are doing a fun show talking about the draft overview, kind of the kickoff show for mock draft prep all off-season long. Obviously, coming off of the pitcher list early mock drafts that we both had with Nick Pollock. It's a great show, Steve. It's a loose one where we're going to be jumping in and out of some of our picks, some of other managers' picks that we liked, and some first impressions on trends and draft values. So wide open off season. How's it going, man?
Good. Yeah, this feels like it's the official kickoff of our prep for 2024, which is exciting. I know we did some sort of second half analysis. I know we had the bonus show on our feed, which was a nice little plug for you with Nick to talk this draft. So I know we get into details with our specific teams on those shows, and those are still running on the corner feed for all 11 teams. I guess, you know, Nick, I don't think, interviews himself and reviews his team.
No.
But those are all great shows, but they get into more specifics on the team. This, we can kind of look at it with a lens to for draft prep for 2022. And, you know, before you know it, once we get through the holidays, that's sort of the official kickoff of draft season and prep season. Like, I know the On the Wire leagues will start. I did a draft as soon as the first 2 weeks of January last year. So there really isn't enough time, or it's never too soon to start prep in the off season. So yeah, got some hot stove stuff that I think is close to both of our homes that we get on, which is nice. The winter meetings are starting Sunday, which, you know, that does seem to be place where a lot of news happens and a lot of signings happen, and I'm all for those happening as soon as possible, because then that gives us the most current information, right? Like, especially, what was it, two off seasons ago when there was the lockout, and we basically were just drafting players without homes and without information. It's important, and especially with, I think, these two pitchers that we'll talk about briefly for the signings. It's where they sign is fantasy relevant, and it helps to know where these guys are going to go, and it bumps guys up or down. So that's always interesting, and excited to get into it.
For sure. Yeah. The bird's eye view compared to just our team is a lot of fun, because it's, it's the first chance we can talk about whatever players we want to, really. So I love that part of it. Listener note, Steve, I think you did say 2022 draft, which is, well, it's,
I thought I said 2024.
That's in the rear view at this point. But the hot stove you mentioned, Steve, We got Cardinals, we got Mets here with Sonny Gray signing to a 75 mil 3 year deal, and it is very backloaded. I think they're only paying $10 million up front, which has some people rumbling that there might be a package trade coming up. So, you know, whether that's a Tyler Glasnow would be great to dream on. Some other names are being thrown out. But overall, Sonny Gray, you know, I don't know if he's like a lock number one starter, but he's definitely the type of pitcher we've been waiting for in the Cardinals Nation camp for quite a while. And I know he had talked with Wainwright and basically heard glowing reviews about, you know, the Cardinals organization and everything, and it was top of Sonny Gray's priority list, apparently. I don't know why he would say anything else, but apparently coming into the offseason or free agency. So very excited on that one, Steve. And then you got Luis Severino out there in Mets land signing to a 1 year, 13 mil deal. And yeah, Nick was saying it was a matter of time when I was on the podcast with Mr. Nick Pollock, that one of these days we'd see Luis Severino signing with the Dodgers because they're so light on pitching. But no, It's the Mets. He's staying out that way. Talk to me about either one of these for fantasy implications, if any.
I think they're both great fits, right? I mean, they're both pitcher-friendly ballparks.
Yep.
Busch Stadium is probably one of, if not the most pitcher-friendly park in the bigs, maybe up there with like Seattle, right? Mm-hmm. And Citi Field is a great place to pitch. It's always been at worst like neutral for pitchers, if not leaning well towards pitchers in one of the place differently year to year. But to go from Yankee Stadium in the case of Severino to Citi Field is a major upgrade. It's always been a question of health with Severino. I mean, he was fantasy relevant and a very useful player, what, as recently as a year ago now, right? He had, you know, 102 innings of a 10 K per nine with, you know, a 3.18 ERA in 2022 and looked really good. And it was, you know, coming back from Tommy John surgery. People were really excited about him heading into 2023 after, you know, coming back and debuting and re-debuting as positively as you can coming back from a major injury like that. And basically everything that could go wrong did go wrong. I think it's great that he's in an environment that he's comfortable in, you know, still living in New York, still being in New York, and just going to a team now that is focusing on pitching development with David Stearns there. He did a great job in Milwaukee. You know, their rotation was, you know, I know they had Corbin Burns and Brandon Woodruff, but they did get the most out of guys in the back end of the rotation. So it's a good spot. I know the default is sort of LO Mets. Of course, the Mets are going to get the worst out of anything. And I don't really think it's fair to look at that in this new regime, despite how poorly last year went for them. So I like it. I think Severino is a great late round flyer, and I think he's going to maybe be a little more than that. Probably not, just because last year was so bad. He's at pick 488 this year so far. I'm imagining that's going to go up. He's basically undrafted in like 12 or even 15 team leagues. But yeah, there's been like 42 drafts, and these are all really, really deep drafts, like drafts and hold. And he's only been he didn't go drafted in three of those, right? So
that's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Actually, there's been a lot more drafts than that. I'm seeing some guys selected 61 times. So, you know, it basically in half the drafts, Severino hasn't got. I imagine that's not going to be the case now that he has a home.
Right.
And especially it's a favorable one. So I like it as an upside play, especially if he's going to be sort of a last pick in a deeper draft. And as far as Sonny Gray, I think maybe, you know, this is a good kick to you, but I think it's a great fit, and it's kind of exactly what the Cardinals needed. And it's even more interesting that the fact that they sort of backloaded the money to keep some money off the books for this year to do something more. I'm sure that's music to your ears.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, still, like, he's just 34 years old, which I know is up there, but he has just shown us basically, if you remove 2021, which I know is an entire season, you're talking about 4 years. So 2 years on either side of that one somewhat down year, which happened to be the year I rostered him, by the way. He's looked really, really good. And last year, yeah, I mean, the results he saw in Minnesota, both years in Minnesota. Only thing is, I know we were raving about the job that Minnesota's done with pitchers in general. Really hoping that nothing regresses with the Cardinals, but everything like under the hood is impressive. I know Eno had some tweets out there that was just talking about basically the repertoire from Sonny Gray and all the upside, not only on, I think it was from a results standpoint, his sweeper was the number one pitch or the number one sweeper in the league, but even from Stuff Plus, it graded out really high. And that's a pitch that he threw second most behind his fastball. Great swing and miss stuff. So the fact that he basically doubled the usage of that pitch last year and it's so good, like it's just so encouraging to see a pitcher at the age of 34 evolving into that kind of like new aging dominance. You know, it reminds me of when Kershaw was kind of reinventing himself as a pitcher and everything. So yeah, I'm definitely rose colored glasses over here that Sonny Gray is going to basically be flirting in that SP2, SP1 territory. Again, the question is for the Cardinals, given this window with Goldie, Arenado, Contreras, and now Sonny Gray, which it fits that mold perfectly. Is there still work to be done? I've seen like Brendan Donovan's name, Dylan Carlson's name, you know, even some of the other pieces like that seem like fixtures in the past, like Tommy Edman. Like the writing is definitely on the wall that there is still a trade happening for the pitchers for the Cardinals, which is exciting. But yeah, fantasy wise, it's a great landing spot as long as the Cardinals don't screw it up.
Even results wise in 2021, I know that was bad, but the underlying numbers were good. It was a 4.19 ERA, but a 3.24 xERA, 3.99 FIP, 3.66 xFIP. Like the strikeout and walks rate were in line. So sure, he had some bad results and bad luck, but that could happen in Cincinnati, especially, right? His homer to fly ball rate was the highest since 2016. For him. So there was a pretty big outlier. There was, you know, a pretty low homer to fly ball rate and at 5.2%. That is by far the lowest of his career. So maybe there will be some regression. But I don't think that you're banking on him having a 2.79 ERA. If he's
no, and Busch Stadium still
Sonny Gray from 2019. It definitely is. But you know, if he has, or even the 2020 in 56 innings when he had a 3.70 ERA, I think you take that with his 25% strikeout rate and 7% walk rate that he's been hovering around the last 2 years. So yeah, I agree. I like it.
I think the biggest question, Steve, and then we should probably get to the real agenda as well. But what do we think on volume for Sonny Gray? Because we just saw him make 32 starts, 184 innings. But the 2 years before that, 119 innings, 135 innings. He's 34 years old, but the Cardinals also do kind of rely on their pitchers. Like, do you just split the difference on all of it and say over under is 170?
It was as high as since 2015, right? I would say around 160 to 170 is what you could bank on him for.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. Well, let's shift over to the mock draft. So, big picture, Steve, I think we got to start with just, the reaction. I mean, this is a mock draft that all of the pitcher list are, it's fully comprised of pitcher list podcast guys and some other guys that do like articles, things of that nature. It's, you know, intended to be an ADP free draft where we pretty much just go blind and make these selections. It's a 12-teamer, it's 5x5,
yep.
Roto, but it's also, head-to-head, I should say, not Roto. That's like
two utilities, three outfielders, so Yahoo, basically standard, and Ohtani is two players, just to sort of lay the ground rules. Not that it matters that much this year, considering he won't be pitching, at least we think, but yeah, basically your standard Yahoo 12 team 5x5 league.
So give me the big picture, Steve. I know I had the one draft slot. I think you were at, was it 8 or 9?
9, I believe.
9, okay. So you're in the 9 slot. I was at the 1 slot. How did you feel it went? Any high-level takeaways? Obviously a blast getting in there and having our first draft of the offseason.
Yeah, it was a blast, and it is always good doing this without being blinded by ADP, or not necessarily blinded, but guided by ADP, right? And definitely some lesson learned. The biggest thing to me, and I think we talked about this briefly when we talked about, you know, just right when we finished this draft, pitchers were bumped way down in this. I think it's sort of just, you know, the fact that we're all podcasters and writers at Pitcher List, and mm-hmm. a process that Pitcher List preaches is sort of to bump pitching down. So I don't know if that's necessarily going to apply to every draft that we do, especially, you know, the industry leagues and weekly leagues, things like that. This is a daily move league. That's actually a good question for Nick. I'm pretty sure that's the case, because that's the Yahoo standard. But, you know, where you're churning and burning, you're back into the rotation, not only weekly, but daily, and especially in head-to-head, that changes things. So pitchers are bumped down in that format. And then just looking at the board, especially in the first round, it's just crazy how many outfielders go. And I know this is more of a topic, and maybe we could sort of bump it in here, but I definitely want to, and especially in shallower leagues, spread out my position eligibility. I went Judge, Soto. I definitely would not go outfielder if I could do this again. Not that that's a problem to have Aaron Judge and Juan Soto as your two hitters, but I really hamstrung myself as far as like trying to fill other positions. I even took Jazz Chisholm in the fifth, so that's three outfielders in my first five picks. I would not do that again, given the choice.
Yeah, that's something both you and I also talked with Nick about it on the show, though, is the offensive cliff around that time, because you were talking about Chisholm, and then you look at the board and it's like, okay, so let's say you didn't take Jazz. Then after that, in the following round, you got here are the hitters. Jordan Walker, Brian Reynolds, which I like Reynolds, but like kind of proven high floor type, but also an outfielder. Then you took Torkelson, which is, you know, on its surface, you're like, damn, sixth round Torkelson. But that's kind of what the landscape is. And then this three pack of third baseman, Bregman, who's kind of meh at this point. I mean, I get it, but then Royce Lewis, who is very exciting, but also comes with a ton of risk. Josh Young, which also exciting. I mean, maybe that's because you had already grabbed Machado. I had Devers in the third round, so we both had already shored up third. And then there was like Arenado. But I guess the point is, like, going through those names, the following round, there's Tristan Casas. Like, it just thins out offensively. It thins out so much faster.
It either goes to limited upside or, you know, unproven, not as long as track record, a lot of question marks, very, very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, that is a huge takeaway. Then the trends, I mean, let's talk about pitching, Steve. Maybe if you're good with it, let's talk trends, just big picture, and then we can get into some of the players.
Yeah.
So, pitching wise, I pulled up what our mock draft was last year and was just kind of looking side by side. And this is kind of a weird thing because everyone's always eager to hear what the pitching landscape is. So last year, there were eight starting pitchers taken by the end of round three. This year, there were only three pitchers in the first three rounds. It was Strider, Gerrit Cole, and then I think Corbin Burns, right?
Kevin Gausman.
Kevin Gausman. Then it erupted in the fourth round this year with like eight pitchers. But last year, the rounds that had the most pitchers was round three, had eight starting pitchers, and then six were taken in round eight. So I'm just looking at this year and like, it's kind of confusing because I know what you mean that like pitching has been moved back. But what I found kind of interesting about our league this year is it's almost like I'm trying to figure out a word this. Do you remember last year when we said we wanted to hammer our first starting pitcher and like just triple tap from pick 60 to pick like 110?
Yep.
This year,
it's now like pick 50. To 100.
Right, 50 to 100. So it's the mighty middle has kind of moved up a little bit pricier.
So on the clicky draft, at least the way I have my settings, pitchers are red. And that cluster of red comes from like round four to round nine.
Yes.
Where
exactly. It used last to year be it was like 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
To like 12, yeah. I mean...
And that's what I was talking about. And that's
where I want to live.
Yes. And that's the same time of the draft when like you took Jazz and you weren't thrilled about it. And then like, even I took my turn there, which was hotly debated with Nick, was Blake Snell. But then I felt like, okay, I just took Snell. I can't go back in on a pitcher because of this theory of, you know, like, load up on bats. So I took Snell. But then one of my biggest regrets is not just jumping right back in on Pablo Lopez. And instead I took Christian Yelich, which I was fine with that pick. But I think in my drafts, I will be pretty, like, adamant on getting three or four pitchers between rounds 4 and 8 or 4 and 9. Because it's all just kind of scooted up except for the first 2 or 3 rounds. And it looks like on ADP, like NFBC ADP too, Steve, there's like, when you look at the, I know pitcherless fades pitching because we're all kind of on that same playbook, but there were only 3 pitchers chosen in the top 30 so far. And then it goes like Wheeler, Castillo, Gausman, Gallen, all of that. So I do think, like last year where there was only a couple pitchers in the first 2 rounds, now I think that's extending to the 3rd round this year. So anyway, long ramble to say the pitching shape is just kind of changing to where you got to jump in rounds like 3 to 8 is a ton of pitching.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I know in NFBC leagues, like, Strider and Cole, I think will be first round picks. Like, there's going to be guys that want the SP stud. I don't know, maybe not Strider just because his surface numbers ended up being not that great. But Cole is just a steady Eddie, and I just think that some people want, you know, the best pitcher in round one. That's just sort of something that happens. Maybe not. Yeah. I would be surprised though. But no, I think you're right. I think that, you know, it's becoming, I don't want to say easier, but it's becoming, you know, everybody has their guys and they're slowly being bumped up from, you know, I don't know. You used to be able to get all, you know, these amazing starting pitchers around 9, 10, 11, you know, picks 100, 120, 130, 140. Now you might have to be spending pick 80, you know, maybe pick 70 on that. But that being said, I do want to load up on offense early, at least in like the first 3 to 4 rounds, at least. Like, if I would do this differently, I think that I would have went like more, you know, spread out my positions throughout the first 3 rounds. I don't think I would have taken Burns. I don't think I would have taken Chisholm and then load up from, you know, anywhere from where, you know, George Kirby went to, you know, I like guys even as far down as like Chris Bassett and Merrill Carolee in round 15, like picks like 6 to 15. I want like that to be like 5 or 6 pitchers, at least half of those to be pitchers. Okay. Where I don't know if I could really do that as much because I needed to fill those position holes that I kind of hamstrung myself with. So that's just an overall takeaway. I think in shallower team leagues, like, pay a little bit more attention to your position eligibility rather than like true best player available. Cause you do only have so many slots to slot these guys in. You don't have these large benches and 5 outfield slots like you do in standard NFBC leagues. In 12 team leagues, you know, you don't usually carry that big of a bench. That's sort of a takeaway and like a reminder for me for, you know, my home league and more standard leagues.
Yep. I'll say, I got stung on how quickly middle infield thinned out as well. I feel like I saved it a little bit with a Ha-Seong Kim in the 9th and Dansby Swanson in the 11th, just as like last chance saloon. I was kind of looking and thinking if I didn't get both of those guys, I would have been in real trouble. Like if I would have gotten sniped, but that was a trend. I think, I mean, everyone's talking about it, but catcher is so deep this year. That's a big trend.
Yeah.
You did. You waited all the way to 19th
round. There were so many. I just didn't. Yeah. I didn't really care. Like even after I took a hobby, like Cal Riley, like Sean Murphy went in round 23. Sean Murphy was like a fantasy MVP. I know he didn't finish well, but the first 2-3 months of the season, he was like one of the best fantasy players, period. Mr. Yeah. Irrelevant in this draft was Francisco Alvarez, who like just mashed 20 homers as a rookie at catcher, uh-huh. right?
There is a 10 to 15 batch of catchers that you're more than okay with compared to past years.
Yeah.
And the ones up at the top aren't that good to where you're getting like severely punished comparatively. You know what I mean? Like, because sometimes it's like when you get that first baseman who's like a contact specialist and you're like, I'm good with him. And then you look at everybody else has 40 home run first baseman and you're like, mm-hmm. oh man, I'm really falling behind. You're not falling behind that much on catcher when you look at Sean Murphy compared to Adley Rutschman. Like, mm-hmm. obviously, you're going to take Adley, but when you're talking about a 6th-round pick versus a 23rd-round pick, like, you'll take the discount there. So that's another trend. Way more closers with a lockdown job. I felt so proud of myself grabbing two relievers that should get 30 saves, and I didn't have to get them until round 10 and round 12. So it definitely feels good after years of basically being like, there's only 4 or 5 that have established roles, and how early are you going to have to pay up? Like, maybe catcher and closer this year won't be as maddening as they have been in the past, right?
Yeah, I agree. Seems.
You did wait, though.
I did wait, but I also think that
might
not be as steady as your guys, but guys that in theory, as of November 30th, two guys that have the job in Alex Lang and Kyle Finnegan, like they basically finished the year as the closers. I know it's not without their warts, and who knows if they're traded, if they even have the job. I know there's some interested guys in Detroit there too. And Lang was flirting with losing the job at several points.
At times, yeah.
This year, but still, I think I agree with that. Like, Kenley Jansen went in round 18, Clay Holmes in round 15. Again, in industry leagues and NFBC, these guys are bumped way up. But, I think that's generally a true statement. There are more defined roles, which it seemed like relatively recently, all teams were going away from that, but you could point to maybe now 20-ish teams and say, hey, that's a clear cut closer, which is pretty helpful, I think.
Yeah, I think so. So we got players that we really liked and ones that maybe we didn't like as much, but we need to take our first ad break and we'll be right back. All right, so Steve, getting into the actual draft recap, talking about favorite picks, I think from ourselves and also on other teams, other rosters. I mean, I can start on my team. I mean, overall, I told Nick I actually felt pretty good about my draft. I think starting at 1-1, Acuna gives you such a head start, just even if he comes back, to 70% of what he did last year, is still practically like two players. And from there, I just like the turn because especially in a sharp room like that, you always know what you're doing twice, mm-hmm. right? Because no one's picking in between you and sniping and all that stuff. So you kind of always feel like you're sticking to a plan. In terms of the actual picks, the early stuff, the early offense was like, I went Acuna and then I told Nick from there, it's like, I felt like I had the league in check in a way. And it's like, don't screw it up. And on that turn, I still feel like Pete Alonso is kind of this year's Matt Olson. And then Devers is just steady Eddie. So to start with Acuna, Alonso, Devers, I felt really happy. But then, move all the way back to like the 13th round. Bailey Ober was my 4th starting pitcher. Really excited about Ober now that Sonny's out as well. I mean, it just kind of underlines that Ober is one of, the horses there. Great fastball, but also showed a lot of good stuff with the secondaries. Phenomenal control. Think he could take a real step forward, kind of like a Logan Gilbert light is what I was saying. And I got Gilbert in the 8th round, but Ober all the way in the 13th round. So felt good about that one. Emmett Sheehan was one in the 17th round that I look at and said, it's that late. It's a Dodgers pitcher. He's young. He's shown a ton of swing and miss stuff. I know when Nick truly gets into the mechanics, he's saying, like, I just don't know if the stuff is good enough. Like, even though the results have been there on swing and miss and everything. But for me, it's like, if you've got multiple pitches that get tons of whiffs and you're a young Dodgers pitcher, like, that's enough for me to say a 17th round pick is worth it. And you know he's going to get the run unless they sign like five pitchers. So I like, those are a few of the ones I liked. And then the last couple bats, Noel V. Marte, I think it's just a fun dart that late. If his power kind of clicks, he could be a 2020 guy. And he hit like 316 last year for the Reds. So I liked Marte. And then I was pleasantly surprised by Tyro Estrada as I dug in and had to kind of defend that pick, that he only played like 120 games and he had 23 steals, like 14 homers. And he's just such a gamer. Great. Like, he plays the game the right way. He should be Mr. Reliable. And, you know, as long as he doesn't get injured, he should play like 160 games for them. I think he just might be creeping into like 2025 territory, even though he kind of feels vanilla. So anyway, just kind of a ramble when I look up and down my team from the exercise of defending the picks to Nick Pollock, some of the ones that stood out there. But what are your thoughts on your team, guys you liked, or anything you want to add to that ramble?
I know we'll talk about, you know, other teams that we like the best, but you were definitely on the short list for me. Like, you know, I kind of scrolled down on a draft board and didn't have all the names up, and we did this, what, now, like a month and a half ago almost. And, you know, your team was one that I wrote down that I like. I mean, I guess it's part of the reason why when you start off with Acuna, Alonso, Devers, that's a really nice base. So, I like it a lot. And I mean, I think you did a good job, but, you know, filling what does get shallow in positions in middle infield and Ha-Sung Kim and Dansby Swanson. I know they're kind of oatmeal-y vanilla guys, but you sort of need those guys to play to the back of their baseball cards to win. And Dansby Swanson hit his 252 with 22 homers, right? That doesn't look great. Yeah. And no one's going to, yeah, ooh and ah about at the draft board, but it's helpful, the fact that he goes out there and he plays every day and it provides that value in a way that may not be the most flashy. So
yeah, he was one that there's always picks in this draft when you got to like argue it with Nick that you're not even sure if you like it when you drafted them. And then as you dig in, you're like, wait a minute, there's a story, there's a path here. And Swanson was one that I told him, like, he only had 9 stolen base, 22 homers, 9 steals last year, but he had like a heel contusion and was out for, or his steals like dropped off a cliff around that time. And it was just kind of like, okay, if that didn't happen, why wouldn't Swanson be one of those guys who could flirt with like 15, 20 steals along with his 20 homers? Like, I just think he's going to run more this year. Yeah, with Craig Counsell in Chicago, like, he's a manager that runs as well, or that has his team run as well. So, yeah, that was one that I kind of convinced myself a little bit of. Yeah. But, yeah, talk to me about your team, Steve. I listened to your whole pod with Nick. I love the Judge Soto. Machado I go in and out of. We talked about that a lot. I know you said Corbin Burns, he kind of fell in your lap, and you're like, yeah, I'm going with this. So then – from there, I'm curious, like, because 4 is like the base, right? Like, it's hard to argue too much with those. Beyond there, like, which of these are you kind of circling as, like, guys you're going to be talking about a lot this offseason, or ones that you're interested in? Or were you just kind of reacting to build your team a certain way?
I like all of the players on my team. I don't like how I built my team / like the process, if that makes any sense. Like, having 3 outfielders out of the 5 first rounds is not great. I know Corbin Burns fell into my lap, but I felt like I could have maybe went somewhere else there. And then tapped in on pitchers a round or two later, but then I also had to fill in like first base, which I thought fell off a cliff. So I kind of panicked and grabbed Torkelson and Yandy Diaz back to back, although Diaz should have first and third eligibility. That also locked up a utility spot for me because I do have Machado already and Spencer Torkelson. So I like all these guys. You know, Yandy Diaz put up above 900 OPS, and to grab him in the seventh round is good. And I know that, you know, the homer upside may be what it was last year, and like the 18 homers, maybe he got the 20, but I would be surprised if he got there again. So there's that limited upside. I like all these guys. I would have done my process a lot differently. Like the fact that Corbin Burnes and Justin Verlander are my first two pitchers make me like, give me like the heebie-jeebies. Like I want my first two pitchers to be like Yuri Perez and Bobby Miller and like upside guys that's more of my formula. So I think we would have leaned into that and sort of done better roster construction. And we'll definitely focus on that in shallower leagues.
It's interesting because anyone who's listened to us for a while knows that you've convinced me or converted me to a fade starting pitching early in like the first three rounds type of thing. But I'm still a couple rounds sooner than you on like what makes me comfortable with an SP1. And I can say right now, like looking at this board, spoiler alert for all the listeners, the whole offseason, I think the SP1s that I'm going to have often this season will probably be on the priciest side: Luis Castillo, Blake Snell, Pablo Lopez, and I'm looking through, maybe if I'm way late on the game, Freddy Peralta. But that's kind of like, in terms of who I want to hitch the wagon to, there's so many names in here that I'm like, Gausman, Colin Strider are too pricey. Mm-hmm. Logan Webb is not enough Ks for me, or like K percent. Mm-hmm. Nola volatility, I'm out. Glasnow, the volume, I'm out. Skubal, the track record, I'm out. Kirby, the K upside. Like Kirby's an SP2 for me, and I love that as an SP2, mm-hmm. but not an SP1 for me. Mm-hmm. Like Freddie does have the ceiling. Max Fried is too boring. He can't be a top three pitcher. So I'm looking at all this, and I'm like, those are my SP1 guys this year, like Gausman was last year, especially a Pablo Lopez. I'm curious for you, Steve, because you're usually like, all right, have fun, Van. I'll be a round and a half later and get some value. When you look at these names, who are like your, you know, early four pack of guys where you're like, okay, I can picture myself having plenty of shares of him as my SP1?
I like anyone from Glasnow, basically through like Yamamoto. Like I would be cool with Kodai Senga as my first pitcher. I would be cool with Tarik Skubal as my first pitcher. I would be cool with Grayson Rodriguez. I really like Max Fried. I think whenever he pitches, he's really good. And I know he was hurt a bunch last year, but I don't think that's like anything that's a common theme with him.
What about Yuri Perez?
I don't know maybe I'm feeling spurned from like the Hunter Green short track record thing, but I think he has less risk than Hunter Green does as far as like the control wise and actually having good shape on his fastball. So I don't know if I would target it, but I would also be okay with it. But
so Glasnow, like
I would ideally take 2 to 3 of these guys. I know that's kind of hard considering a lot of them go in the same round, but
it's very possible because there's enough of them.
Yeah, yeah.
There's 12.
I want, if you look at our draft board, and we'll have the link for this, I want 2 guys from round 6 to 9.
That's fair. Like that's something I can get behind because already I feel way better thinking, like when I look at these names, like I don't feel as bad about Kirby if I know I've got Kodai Senga right after that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like
exactly.
It's just like you're double tapping. Yeah,
maybe
here
I should
SP2s.
Probably bump it that up around and go from like Yeah, which you know, originally I said Glass now to Yamamoto, right? And Kirby was a few pitchers after Glass now. So I'm good with that.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's very interesting. So picks beyond your team, Steve, what kind of stood out? Who's somebody when you looked at the board that you're like, oh man, that's a good one that I would take that value. And we can kind of bounce. We don't have to get in too deep on these guys. Well, we got all off season to break it down, but let's throw out a handful of names just back and forth on kind of what player and what round and pick they went that you were like, oh, that's a great value.
So I wanted to go an early one because, like, when you think of the value, you kind of just scroll to the bottom of the draft board and be like, oh, that's a great sleeper, quote unquote, that I love, or that guy fell way too far. And, you know, we are using ADP data and you know, rankings from before the 2023 season, which could lead to some guys being forgotten or having to be written in. So I wanted to do an early one to sort of change things up here. And I absolutely love the Jose Altuve in round three pick by Jake Crumpler. Yes. I think he's my, you know, if I were to do rankings, he would be my number one second baseman.
Yep.
I know he was limited due to injury last year, but he was so good, gosh, and was like an MVP candidate the year before. He is aging like a fine wine. Second base is a super shallow position. Like, the next second baseman after Jose Altuve was Bryson Stott. Like, geez, mm-hmm. That is no offense to Stott, and I know that he provides his own fantasy value in his own way, but that is one hell of a cliff. I mean, the last 2 years, 920 OPS, 915 OPS for Altuve. I know it was just 410 plate appearances this year, but what he got hit in the hand in the World Baseball Classic, which led to the most of his missed time, and I think he had another IL stint in there. So yeah, sure, there are some injury risks, especially as he is 33 years old, but I don't think it was like a nagging, you know, most of his time was missed due to, you know, something that could happen to anyone playing this game, getting hit in the hand with a pitch and breaking your hand. So I absolutely love Rafael Devers in the third round. I would be targeting that all day long.
Or Altuve, you mean?
Altuve, yep, Altuve.
Yeah, well, it's like, funny you said...
I like your Devers pick, too.
Well, you were, like, in my brain because I was ready to talk about Devers because I had Altuve and Devers on the queue after I got Pete. And I
what
was
made
like,
you?
No.
What made you go Devers there?
Well, because... that was my talk track with Nick is like, if you go Acuna, I really do feel like the best thing you can count on is like floor. Like, I think you've already got a huge leg up on the rest of the league on offense. And then it's like, just don't screw it up. Like, and Devers is just a metronome of like 278 average, 32 homers, you know, 90 runs, RBIs. And I was like, okay, and he can borrow 20 steals from Acuna, and Acuna still has 40. You know what I mean? And it's like, that was the difference. Whereas Altuve, I get what you're saying, but like and he was phenomenal. Like everything you're preaching, he had 7 homers in September at 948 OPS in the second half. But still, when it comes down to it, 90, like he's gonna miss 20 games each time.
That's fair. He hasn't played 150 games since 2017. That's fair.
So yeah, it's been a minute, and he is a little bit older. That said, I don't think there's that much risk in Altuve. And honestly, looking back now, I think there was enough of a positional gap to where I would change what I did. Like, I think my team would be better if I would have gone Alonso, Altuve, and then grabbed like an Arenado in the 7th round or Yandy Diaz or something like that. Because the second base cliff, like you said, is huge.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's a really good one.
Would you would you rather have Altuve and say, because it looked like you would have gotten sniped on like Arenado, Altuve, and who, you know, you took Kim in the ninth round, a third baseman who you could have had around there. Oof, yeesh, that's tough.
Well, it got ugly. I would have been able to get
Brian Hayes or Max Muncy, Jake Berger is kind of who were you looking at if you sort of flip flop there.
Well, it's a good point that like around nine, that there's a big gap between Yandy Diaz in the seventh round all the way to Cabrian in the 11th.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm out on the, like, that's too late for third. But I think I would have probably gone, if I didn't have a third baseman, I would have taken seventh instead of Ozuna.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, 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 you're like right. Seven went the other way. Got you. Yep.
But yeah, it's interesting. I think when I was looking at this, I know we've been talking about pitchers a ton, but one that stands out to me too, Steve, is, and he's at the end of that tier you were talking about, is I really like the eighth round third pick of Zach Eflin. Like when, you know, we were basically expecting him to go off for the Rays last year, and he did everything that we wanted him to. In terms of volume, he went 177 innings. In terms of strikeouts, he had a 26.5% K rate, just a 3.4% walk rate. Like the whip, the 102 whip and the 3.50 ERA is like phenomenal help to ratios. And he's still just 29 with the Rays. Like everything about Eflin is exciting to me. And I was bummed from being in last year that I only had one or two shares. And this year, if that's as pricey as it's going to get, is at the back of that big like SP2 glob, I think I'm going to have a lot of shares of Eflin. So I like that one. Curious your thoughts on Eflin, or if you want to throw out another player you were liking the value on.
I like Eflin a lot, and I think that's, you know, sometimes it's hard to jump back in on a player that was, you know, a wide awake sleeper, to steal a quote from Paul Spohr over at Rotographs, because you get such good value, you pay a, you know, an 18th, 20th round pick for him, and it's like, oh man, I got to draft Zach Eflin in the eighth to get him again. And sometimes that might be the right play. I mean, a 102 whip? Yeah, that's ace whip there. And yeah, he did it with a 27% strikeout rate too. So, you know, and even by the ERA indicators, he, you know, was better than the 3.50 ERA. So
the Rays fixed him. They changed him. They fixed him. Like, the pitch mix drastically changed. Like, this is a new pitcher. It's not the Phillies Eflin and he's not old. Like, that's where I'm.
Glasnow seems like he's most likely going to be traded. So he may be the opening day starter for the Rays unless there's other moves there. So, I like it. Another value pick that I really love, and this comes with a caveat, but it's Bobby Miller in the ninth round to Eric Samulski. There was sort of a caveat that, you know, the room sort of forgot about him because he was bumped so far down in the rankings. But still, hey, ninth round, Bobby Miller is where you get him. I think that's absolutely great value. I think Bobby Miller's like a budding ace, just waiting to, you know, fully develop and blossom in that Dodgers rotation. So I love that pick. All those pitchers from like round seven to nine. I love the Kodai Senga pick in round seven. I love the Yamamoto pick in round eight. I think that those guys are just massively undervalued. I know Senga probably went, maybe a few rounds later last year, and that just paid off all dividends, you know, and by all reports, Yamamoto is just as good, if not better, and is being drafted in the same area as him. I think that there is just a natural discount because we don't have like MLB numbers on these guys, but they're just as good. I mean, Senga was, you know, Cy Young worthy after he got his walks under control, and Yamamoto does not seem to have that control problem as much as Senga did. So I really like those guys and think that they're high upside pitchers for SP1s being drafted as, you know, SP2s for some people, maybe an SP1 for me.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, to add a note on Bobby Miller, he actually, I mean, yeah, there was the thing about people forgot about him, but his ADP across all those leagues right now is pick 89, which isn't that far off from what I'm now calling, like, a terrible name that I'm coining on this podcast, but it's like the SP100 sweepstakes that 2 years like ago it. Was Shane yeah. McClanahan. Last year was Hunter Green. Mm-hmm. And this year, I think Bobby Miller, when I look around that range, is yeah. like the one that I think the industry is kind of anointing as, like, you know, you start to play, you know, the chicken, the game
yeah,
of chicken,
yeah. like right? How are you going like, to go? Oh, yeah. How long right. are you waiting on here? Yeah.
And we can almost guarantee, right, Steve, that pick 89, which is where he's at today on NFBC ADP, he will not be 89 yeah. on March draft.
He'll be 75. That'll be 70s.
Yeah. yeah, right, yeah. right. Yeah. So, yeah, it should be very, very interesting. Trying to see if there's any other ones. I mean, you had some picks as well, Steve, that I liked. Your late pitching darts. I think Hunter Brown is a great one. I think Reese Olson. Although it kills me because they just signed, who did the Tigers? Oh, Kenta
Maeda. Yeah. So
that'll push Gibson Long.
Gibson Long or Olson. Yep. Yeah.
Or
yep.
Olson possibly. Mm-hmm. Or they might just, you know, nag at each other.
The maybe there's a trade to be made with the Cardinals there.
Yeah. I would absolutely love that. But yeah, that, and then Hunter Brown, those both, kind of caught my eye. And then, Nick picking his 11-12 round picks of Shane Boz and Brian Wu.
Yeah.
Both of those. Yeah. I was like, ooh, that's a yeah, yeah. very, very savvy pick.
Very
picks
Nick
there.
Picks. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He told me that in first pitch Arizona, a lot of people were giving him flack about Shane Boz being too early in the 11th. But that seems like right where we were talking about him with Paul Sporer
yeah,
2 years ago yeah. about, you know, is it Boz or is it McClanahan? Who do we want more? And
yeah,
like, the skills
like,
haven't really changed, right?
You know, the draft day clip of writing down, it's like, you know, Shane Boz, you know, don't leave the draft without Shane Boz, Shane Boz or bust, you know?
Yes, yes.
That's what we were writing on our notes in 2022. So, you know, not much has changed other than him recovering from an injury. So I'm for it if he goes later than that. I'm good with that and love that Shane Boz pick. I'm good with him in round 11.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is wild, man. Like, looking at these, like, the pitching that I see from round, you know, 5 all the way through, which is kind of what you were saying at the beginning, but, like, the pitching just keeps going.
Mm-hmm.
And then you switch over to the hitting and you're like, there's a cliff here, there's a cliff here, there's a cliff here. So I don't know how to solve for it.
I want to do a draft where I fill my whole lineup, like, hitters wise before I take a pitcher. And, like,
yeah, who is the closest one? Like, I'm trying
Nick,
to see.
Nick waited the longest. I should have waited okay. him out. He went Grayson Rodriguez in the 7th, I think, was his first pitcher. But I want to do, like, you know, maybe besides mm-hmm. catcher, just because, you know, well, what's the fun in that? Or, the, you know, if I want to stick to the rules, I want to fill out, you know, all 3 outfielders, a utility, and my whole infield before taking a pitcher in one of these drafts.
Why did Nick just forego a shortstop?
Are we missing something?
My
there?
View mode. Yeah. I switched my view mode to. Oh, he said Gunner. Gunner.
Gunner's his shortstop. Gunner's okay. a shortstop. Yeah.
So then his for those listening wondering, so Nick's offense ended up being Real Muto at catcher, Christian Walker at first, Ozzie Albies at second. Third base would be Bregman. Short mm-hmm. would be Gunnar Henderson. Outfield is Kyle Tucker, Lane Thomas, Taylor Ward. Nelson Velasquez at util, and then his second util must be like Jack Sawinski. So then the question becomes like, okay, well, what's his staff look like if he's fading it that much? His SP1 is Grayson Rodriguez. His SP2 is Joe Ryan. Then Shane Boz, Brian Wu, Brian Bayo, Nestor Cortez, Shoto Imanaga, which he really likes, James Paxton, and Kenta Maeda as dart throwers. Yeah,
I don't know if I love the hitters there. I mean, obviously Tucker, Gunner, Albies are who they are, but and good. But you know, that staff is, you know, that's the way I want to build the staff. And that's the way Nick Pollock has taught me to build the staff, and that's what I plan on doing.
Wait late. Yeah. What's a little to push back a little bit. I mean, he at least in the past has preached the four for floor, and he's got Grayson, Joe Ryan, and then Shane Boz as the three is not a floor pick.
I understand and appreciate that and think that's fair, but I think you could also build your floor sort of later than that, right? Like, it doesn't need to be your first four that are the floor, essentially. You know what I'm saying? Like, if Boz does bust, like, it could be Nestor, it could be Imanaga, it could be Paxton, it could be Maeda. Sure, maybe you want to throw in some more of an inning eater, Mitch Keller as one of those, or even like a Lance Lynn instead of one of Paxton or Maeda, since those guys do carry injury risk. But you could build your four for floor later than your first four pitchers.
That's a good point. And maybe something this year that, like, with the surge of all of those, you know, rookies last year, because it seemed like there was like, what, like 10 of them, right? When you look, Mason Miller and Gavin Williams and Bryce Miller and Bobby Miller, like, you're going to have
everyone who
is
Miller debuted as a pitcher. Yeah.
Right. And you're going to, and then you throw in like a Shane Boz, Cole Reagans, you know, say what you want, but still track record stuff. So there's pricier ceiling picks this year that don't afford you that floor. So maybe you're right, Steve, that your four for floor game can include like a 14th round Chris Bassett.
Yep.
Or a 16th round Jose Barrios. I think that's a really good
17th round Eduardo Rodriguez, yeah. You know? Yeah. Things like that.
Yeah. That you can get floor late and pay in a
17th round Braxton Garrett. Like, there are these oatmeal floor guys that are available late.
Okay. Well, we're gonna wrap up with some more names. We got to take our second ad break. We'll be right back. Okay, so Steve, kind of winding down on the rundown here. I guess talk to me about any picks that you viewed as kind of reaches or anything that you kind of wish you could do over in terms of the player itself.
I think I talked about this a lot.
My reach doesn't have to be your team. It doesn't have to be.
I mean,
my team too.
I talked about my team, the way I built it. Like, I like the players, do not like the process and the roster build. Particularly the Justin Verlander pick for me in round 9. Like, I would have went Miller. Brandon Woodruff went right after. At the time, we did not know that he was having shoulder surgery. Even a guy like Kyle Bradish that I think might have some more upside. Verlander's stuff and K numbers have just sort of dropped off in a way that, you know, Nick sort of preached to me and is right about, and has me even more concerned about him. So I think I would have done that a little differently. I also think that the fact that Corbin Burns fell to me, I sort of felt obligated to take him. I don't know if I would do that again, even if he did fall to me in the fourth round. He's not going to fall that far. Like, he's Corbin Burns. He's going to go higher, I think, if anything. But I don't want to let, like, fallen players, you know, oh, I can't let this guy fall too hard. No, just stick to your plan there a little bit. As far as, like, other guys that seem like reaches to me, Lane Thomas, I think in round 5, not to pick on Nick too much. But I think that there's, you know, even the guys right after him, like Cedric Mullins, Jazz Chisholm, even like Brian Reynolds, I think, you know, is a better play than that. Thomas fell off pretty hard in the second half, and I just don't know if I want, you know, my second outfielder, you know, to be someone like Lane Thomas, even if I do have Kyle Tucker to back him up. I just would have went with a different hitter there. Maybe even like, you know, swap Walker and take, you know, Adelise Garcia, and then take Goldschmidt in the next round or something like that. I think maybe that's the play. Or even like Mike Trout. I know that there's injury there, but I'd rather have Trout at the four pick and then, you know, stick to a guy with, I think, a bit more upside than Lane Thomas, who I don't know how sustainable he is. Like, right, that was like the biggest fade, like all of his Stackhouse numbers and and quality contacts metrics just scream regression all last year. And it kind of came. His overall line looked great, but I just don't think that he is worth a fifth round pick.
Yeah, hit 184 in September is pretty rough, even though he had a lot of homers in that month. Yeah, pull side hitter. Like, I get that you could say, like, you could make an argument. I just don't know that I would ever make the argument that it's worth a fifth rounder in a 12 team. So, yeah, I agree with that one. I'm trying to look.
Like, Josh Lowe is, like, 20-30 potential. I know that, you know, he has the platoon splits and Rays, but, like, he went. What, six picks later? Like, I'd rather have Josh Lowe.
Mm-hmm. You're going to hear me all offseason on Nico Hoerner in the eighth round, if that's where he stays, still being a value. That's pretty much where, in the ballpark of where he was going last year, and he was terrific. Trying to see where else. I feel like we need to spend time on Royce Lewis, because while I've been in for a long time, we all have, and we've all been patiently waiting. Gosh, man, I've stashed him in the past, and then he comes back and he gets injured like the second game, and just like heartbreaking. We're all cheering for this guy. He's so fun to watch. But man, for him to be, you got to pay up a top six round pick. Like, he's a cornerstone of your offense. And that, like, I don't want to call it a reach because there's so much potential there. But what if we actually, like, he played 58 games last year. He's played 70 games in his whole career, you know? And it's not like he's a rookie. He's been injured years and years. You know what I'm saying.
The numbers like, were just like, so good. And 240 at-bats, 50 homers, 6 steals, 920 OPS. Like, I see how you could talk yourself into him being, you know, a top 50 – top 25 fantasy asset, but you're right, the injuries are just it'd be a tough pill to swallow, and I'm probably not going to have any shares of Royce Lewis because of it. I mean,
I would have been all over
if he was if I didn't have a third baseman in the sixth round.
If it was pick 105, I would probably be all over it.
I mean, but what's his NFBC ADP right now?
Let's find out. Yeah,
I'm pulling it up right now.
43.
Woo!
That's insane, dude.
There's
just no way.
Yeah, I'd take him in the sixth round of a 12 team, which is what pick.
That's where he went.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
But why is Machado going 30 picks after Royce Lewis in NFBC?
Yeah, that I can't get behind. Yeah, yeah. I mean,
oh man.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we'll see. So that's weird. Looking at other names, I guess in terms of, I've got to just get used to some of these. Like, I cannot believe it. And you took Torkelson, Steve. I know. We talked about him. We liked him and everything. I can't believe Torkelson went only one round, not even a full round, after Goldschmidt.
I mean, there is a one first base drop off, right? Like, I mean, the first baseman taken after Goldschmidt, where Torkelson, Casas, Spencer Steele, Vinny Pasquantino, Josh Naylor, like those are the guys that, you know, maybe I should have waited a little bit, and Torkelson would have fell, and I could have grabbed him in a round with Casas, or maybe even, you know, in the eighth round or ninth round where Steer and Pasquantino went, but there is a fall off.
Yeah. No, I said in the draft room too, I think if Goldie stays there at round five, I'm all in. I don't see why he wouldn't. His ADP in the NFBC drafts is 77.
Who's that? Yeah, I'll be I'm sorry. Back. Who's that? Goldie 77. Yeah.
Goldie. Yeah, I just don't think that it's like the Cardinals were the dumpster fire last year. If you look at his underlying stuff, it all looks really, really good. Dude's body is a temple. So age 36 for him, I think it's like 33 for anybody else. Total Iron Man. And I just don't see why he couldn't be 30, 11, 280 type of thing. And to get that in the fifth round or even later from what the ADP is saying on NFBC. So that's one that I would be very interested in. I think, some of the second half names we were talking about, Steve, but like Michael King, I guess I'm not really doing the fade game very well. I'm saying guys that I'm interested in. But Michael King in the 12th round, I think, is very interesting, which we talked about his second half breakout with the swing and miss stuff. I'll probably have some shares this year. I'm pretty excited about that.
What do you think of Nolan Jones in the 4th round? I'll bring up a tweet that caught my attention. It was from Pile of Dial, who's a big player in NFBC, saying that Nolan Jones and compared him to Keston Hira. Keston Hira in 2019, 303, 19 homers, 314 at-bats, 402 BABIP, 30.7% K rate. Nolan Jones in 2023, 297, 20 homers, 367 IBs, 401 BABIP, 29.7% K rate. So eerily similar. I don't know if Jones has as big of a hole in this game because he does walk. There is risk. Like Nolan Jones in the 4th round, I get the upside. I love Nolan Jones as much as anybody.
Yeah, you're on the record.
Yeah, for sure. On the record, a Nolan Jones lover. But maybe this is throwing some cold water on me. And, you know, follow that up at TJ Stats. Thomas Nestico posted, the contact percentage for Nolan Jones compared to Keston Hira, and like, his zone contact is bottom 10th percentile. Just stayed below the bottom 10th percentile for the league all year long. So I love Nolan Jones, but maybe it's just throwing a little cold water on there.
Yeah. I don't think 4th round I'll have a single share, personally. I know that there's some like probably 35 homers, 30 steals type of appeal.
Mm-hmm. He had 20-20 in 106 games this year.
The average will never, ever be as close to 297 or anywhere close to 297. I just would be shocked. With that strikeout rate, I don't know. He's not my type of player. When Buxton kind of had this, I know that even remove all the injury stuff from Buxton, like when he was super high strikeout power speed, it always to me was like, go the other way. Like I like to get hitters that are kind of pure and not scary hitters at the top of my team. So like, I really am not one to grab guys like this. So I'll probably be out, but I definitely get it. And I think, we've seen Adelis Garcia do it. We've seen, some other big swingers like Luis Robert, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't always mean just cause you lack discipline, you can't make up for it with like bat speed and, you know, the damage you do when you do make contact. To me, it's like a cherry bomb hitter at the top of the lineup. I'll probably pass. If I went with a Nolan Jones, I would want to surround it with floor like Devers, like Freddie Freeman, things like that.
It's hard to do that when you spend that high of a pick on a player like that to sort of protect yourself like that. So I get the hesitation. What I will say is that they do have similar holes in their game. It's the high fastball. What is interesting is that Keston Hira basically was unable to solve that, and he was unable to lay off that pitch. Nolan Jones cannot hit the high fastball. He, in if you go to Baseball Savant and look at the zones and look at the K percentage by zones, he strikes out a ton up in the zone. The thing is, he does not swing at pitches up in the zone. He waits for you to throw the ball down and miss down, where he absolutely crushes the ball. Keston Hiura was unable to lay off that high pitch. Which Nolan does. He basically acknowledges he has a hole in the zone there.
Right.
He
just doesn't swing at it. Not everybody's throwing him upstairs. And just like,
he banks on you either missing high and he'll take a walk. You know, he walked 12.5% of the time last year. Keston Hiura never walked more than 8.6% of the time. But yeah, I mean, he has the discipline to at least not swing that much in the top of the zone. He does whiff a ton. He whiffs a ton up there, but he does not swing. It is the three zones, the three little squares at the top of the strike zone that he swings the least in. So, you know, I think that is...
And he's got cores.
Yeah, he's got cores. And that's just a sign of a player that knows his strengths and waits for the pitcher to make a mistake. I mean, it's hard to, right? It's not as easy as it seems to just throw the ball in those three zones.
Thinking of Coors, was he the one we were talking about that he was doing more damage on the road than at Coors, or am I thinking of a different?
I believe so. I don't think his home road splits.
So he
might have
turned it around. They weren't bad.
Were like anything crazy?
So he had a 934 OPS on the road, a 934 on the road, and a 928 at home.
Yeah, his WRC. I mean, I know this is park adjusted, so maybe that's not the best stat. But yeah, he slugged 530 at home, slugged 544 on the road.
Interesting. Okay, so maybe
struck out a ton more on the road too, which is interesting.
So maybe there's some room for Coors to
His NFBC
infuse
ADP
the stat line a bit more.
Sorry, only a first baseman up. Interesting, he does not have
58,
first base.
It looks 58.71.
So in a 12-teamer, what you have to take him in the fourth round?
The fifth round, I think. Yeah.
I really, really, really want Nolan Jones shares next year. I don't know if I'm going to be able to pay up, but maybe I'll have to. This game is about
fun.
We
went fourth
anyway.
In ours. I know it is. Yeah. It is. I think you could do it. I think you could surround yourself with some floor.
I just, you know, backhanded, you know, verbal meme of Always Sunny in Philadelphia with that plan and all the arrows and everything pointed back into why his swinging strike and strikeout rate isn't that big of a problem or a debilitating hole in the game like a Keston Hiura or to a lesser extent a Tyler O'Neill.
Here's a build for you, Steve. First round, Bobby Witt Jr. Second round, Yordan Alvarez. Third round, Ellie De La Cruz. Fourth round, Nolan Jones.
So
fifth round,
you can't,
Jazz
you can't
Chisholm.
You can't do Ellie and Nolan. That's just too much risk.
Just volatility everywhere.
Yeah. You got to do like Witt, Alvarez. I don't know, Devers and Jones or something like that.
I don't think that was my gag joke. Is that? I think any of the, like, I don't even think I'd do Alvarez, Jones, because if Alvarez gets injured and Jones is just swinging and miss, like, I would want so much cushion, I think, on guys like that. But yeah, it's a guy that you can pair up with other guys too, because he is a 30-30 threat. So, okay. Well, Steve, rounds us out for this one. Next week we're off, and then we will be back week after next. For what should be kind of our Christmas episode. So yeah, if you guys have any players you want us to do a little breakdown on, feel free to reach out. We're on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I'm at Van_verified. Steve is at Stav8818. You guys can email us as well throughout the offseason, winsabovefantasy@gmail.com. But yeah, Steve, this was a blast, just kind of taking the bird's eye view. And yeah, man, very excited for all off season to start getting into.
We're in it now. We're preparing the for 2024. This is exciting.
Yeah, underway. Yeah. And before long, we'll be doing a little January best ball draft or something. Yeah. So,
love it.
Okay, well, thanks, guys. Appreciate it, as always. Leave us a rating and a review if you could. It goes a long way. Otherwise, till next time, thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks for listening, guys. Later.